Hello, I'm Bob Welch. This is number 0167, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0167. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Michael R. Davidson, who is a former CIA field operative and the author of the CIA thriller Harry's Rules. Because of his past knowledge, does he have to clear what he writes with the CIA?
Everything I write was a former Central Intelligence Agency case officer and senior intelligence officer. I have to submit to the agency's publications review board before it can be published, just so they can make sure I'm not inadvertently giving away any secrets. So I think we're all pretty careful in what we say. There are lots of stories out there that will never be told simply because they remain very sensitive and because lives or national secrets could be at stake.
Rick Dean is the author of Men Don't Pee Straight and Other Things You Should Know About Us.
It started as a joke with a girlfriend of mine. Basically, she wanted to write down everything I was doing that was male stereotypical, and I took that concept and cartoonized it and turned it into this book. It's a bunch of cartoons and multiple choices by which she or anyone else could select what I was doing incorrectly or what the man in their life is doing incorrectly. So it was actually a fun little joke that grew into this book.
Actor Jodie Thompson, who is in the new Barry Levinson thriller The Bay. It's yet another film where he plays someone in a uniform.
I hate to say that I get pigeonholed to protect and serve many times. But yeah, this one is I'm pretty excited about because I'm protecting and serving him in a little bit different way. So it's really an exciting project.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you that this was show number 0167, is Bob Welch, host of The Score. That's a sports and rock show on WDEV in Waterbury, Vermont, and it's heard weeknights from 9 to midnight. And by the way, Bob dropped by my other place of work, that's Global News, this past weekend, and said hello. He was in town, so nice to see you, Bob. Actually, it's the first time we physically have met in person. And I thank you again for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. The Stuff File program is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? British mobile phone users have been losing and destroying their handsets in some very bizarre circumstances, according to a new report. A Devon farmer claimed to have damaged his iPhone by accidentally inserting it into the rear of a cow while that cow was giving birth. He was using the phone as a light. Oops. A woman in her early 40s from Nottingham admitted that she absent-mindedly baked her Nokia phone into a Victoria sponge intended for her daughter's birthday. A couple reenacting the classic Titanic scene featuring Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet lost their phone over the side of a cruise ship whilst trying to take a photo of themselves. Another woman in her 30s said she lost her Samsung Galaxy after it was snatched from her hand by a rogue seagull while walking out on a Barry Island beach. That was in Wales. In Liverpool, a woman in her 20s reported breaking her HTC Desire X phone by throwing it at her cheating boyfriend and hitting a wall instead. A pyrotechnician claimed his iPhone 3GS was fired 3,000 feet into the air after being left in the blast zone during a display of fireworks in Plymouth. A man in his 30s claimed he'd been filming monkeys from the car window in Longleat Safari Park with his HTC One X when one of the monkeys climbed on the roof and snatched it. And a woman in her late 20s, this is my favorite, from Bristol claimed the vibration function on her BlackBerry Bold 9900 phone had stopped working while she was using it as an adult toy. A spokeswoman for mobileinsurance.co.uk said each claim has been fully and rigorously investigated. What I want to know is, what method did the insurance company use to verify that last one? Wow. And how long do you think she thought about using her phone on vibrate before she actually, you know, used her phone on vibrate? And I'm guessing she had another phone where she repeatedly called herself. Yeah. Anyway, the ongoing feud between two Warwick, Rhode Island households has intensified, according to an August complaint. Kathy Melker and Craig Fontaine charge that not only has their neighbor Lynn Taylor been harassing them with verbal insults and threats, but that Taylor has now taught her cockatoo to call Melker on site a nasty epithet, which, by the way, rhymes with clucking boar. Yeah. I'm 53 years old and I've never been called that phrase in my life, Melker said. Okay, childish, I know, but just for a moment, you have to admire the lengths that some people will go in order to get their point across, don't you? Yeah. Anonymous tips brought a SWAT team to a home in Modesto, California. After bringing out the residents and searching the home, Martin Martinez, age 51, was arrested on suspicion of marijuana cultivation, possession of drugs for sale, and weapons charges. Inside the home, they allegedly found about 20 large marijuana plants, an AK-47 assault rifle, two 45 caliber handguns, and two shotguns. The house was guarded by two pit bulls and a pig. This is a quote from Police Chief Gene Ballantyne. I've been doing this a long time and I've never seen a guard pig. But it was a pretty vicious pig. The pig continued to lash at officers even after it was tranquilized. Wow, even after it was tranquilized. It took six SWAT team officers to get the pig into an animal control vehicle. It was later euthanized. The dogs were taken to an animal shelter. Wow, with apologies to E.B. White, that's some pig. I hope at least he was good eats. And sticking with animals, spending on health care for pets is rising, of course, as companion animals are given almost equal status as family members. In Australia, veterinarians who provide dental services told Queensland's Sunday Mail in August that they have even begun to see clients demanding cosmetic dental work, including orthodontic braces and other mouth work, to give dogs, quote-unquote, kissable breath. Yeah, and smiles improved by removing the gap tooth look. Once again, we are dealing with people who have more dollars than cents. And trust me, I'm guessing there's nothing freakier, although I've not seen it, than seeing a dog with braces. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Daniel Phipps, age 31, ran off the road and hit a guardrail on I-295 in Delaware. The trooper who responded to the scene of the accident found that Phipps appeared to be impaired. That's according to a police statement. Phipps told the trooper that the accident was a result of swerving to avoid an elephant he observed running in the path of his vehicle. Phipps allegedly admitted he had been smoking marijuana dipped in PCP before driving. He was charged with his DUI, that's his seventh such offense, as well as driving without insurance. Gee. He actually said he saw an elephant running into his path. Too bad he didn't say it was pink, because then you could say he was so stoned he actually saw a cliche. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Michael R. Davidson is a former field operative in the CIA. He's also the author of Harry's Rules, which is a CIA thriller. He's here now to tell us a little bit of the tools of the spy trade. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how you doing? Greetings in Montreal.
Doing very well. Thanks for being on the program with us. Right off the bat, I have to ask, I mean, you've written this book. You're someone who was in the system. And, you know, there's also the new film that was out called Argo, which deals with another CIA operative. And I'm just wondering, there was a time when you never heard of people who were in the CIA or who used to be in the CIA, and now they're coming out of the woodwork.
Well, that's one way to put it, I guess. You know, Argo is the story of a fellow I've known and worked with, Tony Mendez, who was our disguised genius. I used to go to Tony whenever I was going out on a trip to some strange place as someone other than myself, and Tony would fix me up with a nice disguise.
So the reason why I asked the question is I thought it was one of these situations where the types of things you guys used to do as a living was something that literally went to the grave with you, or you wrote books, maybe thrillers, under a nom de plume, for instance.
Well, yeah, that happens, of course. I think there's a secret writer in all of us with lots of, and we have lots of great tales that are doing their best to get out. Of course, in everything we write, everything I write, for example, as a former Central Intelligence Agency case officer and senior intelligence officer, I have to submit to the agency's publications review board before it can be published, just so they can make sure I'm not inadvertently giving away any secrets. So I think we're all pretty careful in what we say. There are lots of stories out there that will never be told, as you said, simply because they remain very sensitive and because lives or national secrets could be at stake. But my purpose, actually, in writing the book was to try to describe to the reading public the way a real CIA officer feels and the way he goes about his business. You know, there's a lot of spy fiction out there that's written by people who have never actually been on the ground in an intelligence operation. And so we thought it would be a good idea maybe to put some books out there that tell a more accurate tale. In my book, Harry's Rules, for instance, there is nothing that happens that could not really happen. As a matter of fact, it's based on actual historic events.
How does someone even get into the CIA? Is it a situation where one is recruited? Do people actively pursue to get into the CIA to have a job there? How does it work normally?
It used to work back in the old days, at the very beginning, much the way the British used to do it, by word of mouth and by recruitment by people who were inside, people who had been recommended to them, or particularly brilliant students, people who had extraordinary language abilities, for instance. That's why I was recruited, was because I happened to speak pretty good Russian some years ago. Today, it's a much more bureaucratic, cut-and-dried process. You can actually go to the CIA website on the web and fill out an application. But if you get accepted, you can expect that process to take at least a year as you go through numerous background checks, personal interviews, and polygraph examinations. And then if you are fortunate enough to be accepted for employment, you can expect another year of training. I'd say that, you know, by the time a CIA officer gets to the field, the U.S. government has spent about $250,000 in his or her training and preparation.
Is it difficult to have a life once you're in the CIA? And by that I mean, can you be married with kids? How does that work?
Well, I think most of us are married with kids. Divorce is an occupational hazard in the agency, or at least it was when I was in there, simply because of the rigors of the kind of lives we had to lead. But Yes, of course. My wife, for instance, went just about everywhere with me. We were assigned, of course, we lived together in many foreign countries. She also received training and operated extensively as an adjunct to my own operations. You know, it's a different lifestyle. It's a different way of looking at things, we form very, very close bonds with one another, and also with our State Department and other government colleagues that we work with. One of our most interesting assignments, for instance, was in Warsaw, Poland, at the height of the Cold War, and we were handling very sensitive and valuable assets at the time. And I must say that we had probably the best group of people it's ever been my privilege to work with in that embassy. Everybody pulled together as a team, and it's really a very inspiring occupation.
The reason why
it's much more than an occupation. I say in my book, for instance, that intelligence work is a little bit like crack cocaine. Once you get a taste of it, you can never quite get away from it again.
Well, the same could be said for radio. I asked the question, though, because I'm going on the assumption that, you know, a spy can be in the CIA, but not everybody who works for the CIA is a spy. Would that be correct?
Well, I think there's a question of professional definition here. We don't refer to ourselves as spies. A spy is someone, an agent we have recruited who is working for us. We refer to ourselves as, if you're in the field operating, we refer to ourselves as case officers because we handle cases which involve those particular spies. I was a clandestine services officer, which means my field of endeavor was human intelligence, and that's quite a, at times, scary undertaking.
I can imagine. Because, again, going back to the family question, people have an image, whether it's right or wrong, as to what the CIA is and what it does. And if little Johnny's going to school saying, my dad works for the CIA, that brings up a whole connotation in other people's minds.
Well, that's one of the things that you have to swallow a bitter pill about. In that you really can't tell your children what your real job is until they've reached an age when they understand what their responsibility is to keep that knowledge quiet. So as far as CIA children are concerned, up to a certain age, mommy and daddy work for the State Department or sell shoes down the street or work in a nice office somewhere in Virginia.
What countries present, in your estimation, the biggest threat right now to the United States and to extension to Canada and I guess Great Britain as well?
Yes, well, I would say that, of course, the non-state danger presented by international terrorism, especially that promoted by radical Islamists, is the most clear and present danger we face these days. But at the same time, I wouldn't want people to lose sight of the fact that we continue to have state adversaries on the world stage. One of them continues to be Russia, of course, which has its own strategic interests and own strategic pursuits. Syria is a good example of where we and the Russians are at loggerheads. Syria for the Russians is a very important strategic location. It's the base for their fleet in that part of the world. They have very important considerations in that area that concern their oil and gas exports. Another obvious adversary is China. which is now raising its profile considerably in the Western Pacific. They would very much like to see the Western Pacific become a Chinese pond. And this is at a time when, for various reasons, the United States fleet has been reduced to a level that it hasn't seen since the period before World War I. So we have multiple adversaries around the world. The world is very complicated. And if I may venture an opinion, it's more dangerous today than it has ever been.
We have just about a minute. I want to ask, with the advent of computers, with the situation of hacking and spying via computers, how big of a role or how big of a concern is that in today's world in the CIA, dealing with either rogue countries or even companies who want to do damage electronically?
Well, we've just heard the Secretary of Defense describe how the Iranians basically trashed 30,000 computers when they tried to shut down the Saudi Arabian oil fields. We are daily bombarded by hacking from China in the United States and Canada. It's a new problem, one that we have to work very hard to deal with. And it's an area that is well beyond my capabilities and my knowledge as a human intelligence officer. But as I was coming up in the agency, that problem certainly received a great deal of attention and still does from both your authorities and from ours.
And your thriller, your CIA thriller, Harry Rules, I take it this won't be the last thriller that you'll be writing.
Actually, I have another one completed called Incubus, which will be coming out at the end of November or the beginning of December, just in time for Christmas.
Excellent. And people can find out more information by going to your website, which is michaelrdavidson.com.
That's correct. Or they can go to a website I've started with a couple of other former CIA colleagues called spymastersguild.com.
Excellent. I thank you very much, Michael, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
My very great pleasure. Good evening.
Michael R. Davidson, CIA former field operative and author of Harry's Rules. You can check out his website at michaelrdavidson.com. And you could also find him at spymastersguild.com. Or just go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0167. And you'll find links to Michael's site, and also links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're experiencing The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Men Don't Pee Straight. Plus, we'll meet actor Jodie Thompson, who's in the new thriller, The Bay. Plus, we have, of course, an idiot of the day, and lots more stuff here on the Stuff File program, a program heard on Stitcher Smart Radio. And for those of you who still don't know what Stitcher Smart Radio is, shame, shame, shame on you. It is a way to hear radio on the go. Basically, when you download Stitcher, you can hear the Stuff File program or any other show you'd like to hear that's on Stitcher, because there's over 10,000 of them, and it makes it easy, and you have no downloading to do besides the Stitcher app, no downloading for the shows. It's free, and it's great for any mobile device you have. And just want to let you know, you have a chance to win some money. Downloading the Stitcher app is free and easy. Just find it at the App Store. And if you download it, which just takes a few seconds, during registration, hit the promo code, hit the box that says promo code, and enter Stuff File. That's STUPHFILE, Stuff File, and get automatically entered for a chance to win $100. Yes. The latest episode of the show will be waiting for you in your favorites. You'll get access to lots of other shows, too, as I mentioned, over 10,000, always available for you on demand, no syncing. It's Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Don't forget to enter the promo code STUFFFILE when you register. Let's get back to the STUFFFILE news. Daniel Guillermo Tudela was walking down the street in Atlanta, Georgia, and happened to be walking toward a theater. Onlookers thinking about the theater shooting in Colorado called police to report to Della as suspicious. There were a lot of wires sticking out of his clothing. An officer stopped him. The wires were for his phone, MP3 player, and GPS. There was no bomb or any other suspicious device, but police arrested him anyway, charging him with having a hoax device. His attorney calls the charge wrongful, outrageous, and inflammatory, and added that Tudela had no intent whatsoever to give any appearance of possessing a destructive device of any kind. Tudela, who looks vaguely Middle Eastern, was released within hours, but the charges are still pending. You know, since surely he's the only one carrying such devices around, we can at least rest assured he wasn't arrested for the crime of being brown. Yes. Because, you know, it has been speculated that some law enforcement agencies have been known to use Sherwin-Williams paint swatches when assessing potential criminals, and they take a closer look at anything beyond khaki. And also in our Stuff File news, a woman who described herself as an exotic dancer rang the doorbell at a customer's house in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, but the man refused to answer. So she did what any motivated entrepreneur would do. She called the police to report theft of services. Yeah. Police Captain Mike Schwartz said the man also refused to answer the door for the officer who was dispatched to the residence. This is a quote from Mike Schwartz, who I think has a pretty good sense of humor about things. He said, "I guess there are some people who would have a better dance than others. Maybe you were expecting Mikhail Baryshnikov and you get someone like Mike Schwartz. I wouldn't answer the door either." The responding officer determined that no crime had occurred. Mike went on to say, "She never danced, so I would be hard-pressed to say it was a theft of services. Now, if she was a professional doorbell ringer..." Again, police officer with a good sense of humor. Okay, am I missing something here, by the way? Is there a new service out there where exotic dancers go door-to-door? I mean, man, we've come a long way since Girl Guide cookies and the Avon lady. And by the way, personally, if my doorbell rings and I'm not expecting someone, and I look out the window and I don't see either a mail delivery truck, a UPS truck, or Ed McMahon with a giant check, I'm not answering the door either. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Rick Dean seems to be giving away all the male secrets. His new book is entitled Men Don't Pee Straight and Other Things You Should Know About Us. Rick joins us on the line right now from Florida. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you, Peter?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. So, why are you giving away our secrets?
That's a good question. I've received a bit of criticism about that.
in a fun way, of course. Actually, it started as a joke with a girlfriend of mine, and basically she wanted to write down everything I was doing that was male stereotypical, and I took that concept and cartoonized it and turned it into this book. It's a bunch of cartoons and multiple choices by which she or anyone else could select what I was doing incorrectly or what the man in their life is doing incorrectly. So it was actually a fun little joke that grew into this book.
Okay, first of all, are you still with this girlfriend?
No. I am not. This is a couple years ago, and I just released the book now after working through it. So
okay. Was she just someone who compulsively liked to comprise lists?
Yes. She was somebody who compulsively liked to point out compulsively everything compulsively.
So, since you're no longer with her and you've now only just put out this book, is she aware of the book and have you been in contact with her or vice versa?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we've remained friends and she's aware of the book, and I just was actually visiting her, and it was kind of funny. She has a proof of the book, and at one point we had dinner and I took my dishes all the way from the kitchen to the sink, which was, for me, a really long way to take all these dishes. And I left them by the sink. And, of course, she pulled out the book, brought up that section of the book, and started making the appropriate notations, which I told her that since I'm published, I'm beyond that. I'm above that. But she didn't think so.
Oh, so basically now what you've done is you've given her more ammunition. And conversely, by extension, you've given all the other women out there ammunition.
Well, you know, I figure it's healthier for them to be able to get it out this way than some other way. So I think I'm actually probably doing everybody a favor by giving them a good outlet, a healthy outlet, in writing rather than in some other way. How's that?
Okay, so while having a title that reminds people of me, myself, and Irene, what other things can people learn by going through the book, Men Don't Pee Straight?
Well, basically it covers the various male stereotypes, and it's just a fun cartoon book that they can look at some funny pictures, write down, make notations on some pretty funny or hilarious multiple selections on what the guy in their life or the person in their life just did incorrectly or stereotypically, such as, you know, well, don't try to take away the remote control from us, because we might A, grab it back from you, or B, stomp out of the room, or C, make you leave the room so we can watch what we want to watch, that kind of thing. Kind of silly stuff.
Oh, or, from a guy's point of view, complete common sense. I mean, we do have the remote, right?
Yeah, don't try to take it away from us.
Now, have you talked to guys about this book? What do they think about it?
So no guy that I've talked to has been all that, I mean, they laugh at it humorously, of course, but not all that thrilled, and I can kind of understand why. But overall, it's getting very positive from the women, and just like, really, why would you do that for the guys?
Now, in writing this book, in putting this together, has it made you in any way, shape, or form rethink some of your habits?
It has made me realize that my habits are pretty deeply ingrained, and it's actually been kind of eye-opening that way. But the book did evolve a lot over the last 8 or 9 months before it was published, and apparently my stereotypical male habits have not evolved, because they stay pretty much the same. But I'm a bit more aware of them.
Now, do you have any siblings, by the way?
I do. I have one brother and one sister.
And are your parents still alive?
They are.
What does your mother say about this book?
That's a very good question. She looked at the title and said, "I think this book should be censored." She's a bit old-fashioned and a bit old culture, so she was. I think she said, "You're using your writing ability on something like this," is where she came from.
Mm. But that being said, does she think you're right?
Oh, yeah. So without a doubt, it's hard for pretty much any woman to look at this and say, well, he's not right. Yeah, definitely.
Now, your sister grew up with you and your brother, so yep. has she given this book the stamp of approval?
My sister has given it a pseudo stamp of approval. Of course, I'm the youngest, and she's the middle, and she also just rolled her eyes and said, you are just too goofy. So she likes it in a reserved kind of sisterly way while rolling her eyes at her little brother of, you know, why are you doing this? Really? Okay, I guess goofball.
And how proud is Dad?
Dad got the biggest kick out of it, out of my brother, you know, my family. He writes some very serious books about economies and economics and things like that. And he looked at this and he said, you know, this, I wish I were writing stuff like this rather than what I'm writing. So he got a big kick out of it.
Wait a minute. So your father writes books and he's extremely proud of this book that you've written. And your mother laments about the title and that what you're doing with your writing skills. That's very interesting.
I find it interesting, too, but that is how it is.
Now, are the since you do have a brother, are all the things in the book your habits, or are some of them his as well?
They're mostly my habits, but basically just anything I've heard since the college years of things that women have complained about. And I bantered around a little bit with him, but mostly it's pretty stereotypical stuff. But over the years, what I've heard, I've just remembered and written down in here.
Since you say you started writing this book based on the note-taking of a previous girlfriend, are you currently in a dating situation or a relationship?
I am in a dating relationship, but I travel a whole lot, so it's she's in Seattle right now, so it's a bit of a long-distance relationship. I'm currently traveling up and down the East Coast, and I'll be back out in Seattle in about 2 weeks. So she has the book. She definitely uses it, and she definitely laughs at my stereotypes and how I go about things based on this book.
In a perfect world, do you think that every guy should take this book and hand it to a date? And if so, should it be the first, second, or third date?
Maybe the eighth. It definitely not the first, second, or third. Well, maybe the third. But it's more for established couples that are kind of happy with themselves, although it would work, I guess, early on in a date. But perhaps if it sells well enough, the girl would already have it and be using it to notate what she thinks of her, of the guy.
Now, do you think that you're going to follow up on this book in any way, shape, or form? For instance, perhaps maybe collaborating with your very own sister or girlfriend or both to come up with a female version of this book?
Yeah, I would like to do a female version. And in fact, I've had a couple other people speaking with me, they've started promoting that idea. I just can't seem to get my head around the types of things that would be fun to poke fun at with the fairer sex.
Are you saying that guys have a better sense of humor about these things?
I would never say such a thing out loud on the radio and be recorded saying such a thing, but it is possible that I might be alluding to something like that.
Okay. Did you do all the illustrations yourself?
You know, I got these illustrations from a very good source called Ron Leishman. He does cartoon illustrations, so Ron did most of these illustrations.
Well, the book is called Men Don't Pee Straight and Other Things You Should Know About Us. Where can people find the book?
Amazon.com.
Excellent. Rick, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter. I really appreciate it.
Good luck with the book, and I'm sure there are some people on both sides who might want to hunt you down.
I'm sure they are, and it makes a great stocking stuffer if somebody's interested in that.
Rick Dean, author of Men Don't Pee Straight and Other Things You Should Know About Us. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0167, and you'll find links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. In 1776, Thomas Jefferson wrote that judges should be a mere machine. What did he mean? Well, a properly working machine runs as directed, so he meant that judges should follow the directions of legislators who made the law, as long as it's constitutional. A lot of political experts these days like to measure judges by whether they're conservative or liberal, but the first job of judges is to enforce the law, even when they don't agree with it. A few years ago, a judge on the Wisconsin Supreme Court explained Jefferson's philosophy this way. If a state's highest court is working as it should, it will issue conservative rulings when conservatives control the legislature, and liberal rulings when liberals are writing the laws. Let's be fair. When judges set aside politics and enforce the law, they create confidence in the law. One reason that's so important is that it gives job providers the confidence they need to grow and expand. And that's something that America needs now more than ever. Learn more at centerforamerica.org.
Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the common folk. It all comes to you here on The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to actor Jodie Thompson from the movie The Bay. Plus, we also have an idiot of the day. But first, a couple more Stuff File news stories for you. An unidentified teacher at Highland Middle School in Anderson, Indiana, accidentally synced a photo of herself from her iPhone to her classroom iPad and then let several students use the tablet. "We couldn't do anything not to look at it," said student Joshua Trout, age 13. "It just popped up when a classmate pressed a button. What they saw," police said, "was from the neck down with partial exposure of her chest." Detective Joel Sandifer said no criminal violation could be gleaned from the evidence as presented, so the matter was turned over to the school and the police investigation closed. Assistant Superintendent Beth Clark agreed that the whole situation was an accident and there was no violation of the district's technology use policy. Isn't that nice? It seems like common sense has prevailed. Oh, wait a minute. I spoke too soon. The school thought that someone needed to be punished. That's why parents are outraged. No punishment for the teacher was announced, but the kids who saw the photo were suspended. So, the teacher accidentally syncs up a partial nude photo of herself to the classroom iPad, but the students get a suspension. Yeah, sounds like the parents need to sync a photo of their lawyers. Anyway, on to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program. Jodie Thompson has basically been an actor all of his life. You will have a chance to see his most recent work in Barry Levinson's thriller, The Bay, which opens on November the 2nd. Jodie joins us on the line right now from Georgia. Hi, Jodie.
Hey, thanks for having me, Peter. Good to be here.
Thanks for being on the program with us. You're playing, I believe it's a police officer, are you not?
That's it, Officer Paul. Officer Paul.
And it's not the first time you've played a role where you're in a uniform.
No. I hate to say that. I get pigeonholed to protect and serve many times. But this one is I'm pretty excited about because I'm protecting and serving in a little bit different way. So it's really an exciting project.
I've seen the trailer of the film, and it is very creepy. For those who may not have a chance to see the trailer, can you describe the movie for us?
Yeah, basically it is a little town called Claridge, Maryland. I liken it maybe to Mayberry. And it's an ecological outbreak that takes place in this town. Sort of like Hitchcock's The Birds. But instead of birds, we have these little creatures called isopods. And basically, what an isopod is a real creature. Basically, they get inside of a fish and eat their tongues out. And these little creatures, in turn, get inside the people of Claridge, Maryland, and start eating them from the inside out. So, it's good times had by all.
Good film for Halloween, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, what's kind of creepy about this film is these things really exist and Barry uses a lot of footage from different mediums. He took news footage and security camera footage, so it's kind of unlike any lost footage film that you've seen before in the past.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction that you have been acting basically all of your life. If I'm not mistaken, didn't you start performing at around six?
That is right. Yes, I did. I had a little kindergarten play. I think we were doing a circus. I happened to be one of the lions. My grandma made my lion costume, and I think everybody else bought their lion costume from the same store. So I was the outcast lion, as it were. And anyway, all I remember is that my lion hood fell off. And I ran off stage crying. So that was my introduction to being a thespian. Pretty awesome.
Well, as you describe it, it doesn't sound like an experience that one would cherish or relish. It's not like you got the thrill of the of hearing the audience in the crowd from that experience. Yet you went back on stage. Obviously, did you always want to be an actor?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Did you always want to be an actor, and you got past that first situation?
Yeah, well, you know, my dad is a natural entertainer, and he's always been on stage in one form or another. So being like any kid who wants to make his dad proud and be like his dad, it was kind of a no-brainer for me. And then, as a matter of fact, my dad still to this day does performances around. So, again, I just wanted to follow in his footsteps.
Not that this is a business that's easy, but it must be a little bit easier to have family and friends who back your ideas of doing this, because so many people want to be actors or singers or dancers, and their family doesn't really see the potential because it's a difficult business and they're not as encouraging as perhaps somebody who has already been on stage.
No, definitely. I've had one of the biggest support systems ever just in my family. They're my biggest fans. And in Georgia, you know, I grew up here and then went out to L.A. I'm kind of back and forth in between a lot, but I still have a lot of the same friends that I grew up with. And let me just tell you, they are they're very supportive of me. So it's good to know that you have this core of people supporting you even through the lean times, you know, so they just encourage you and help you to keep going.
As you mentioned, you've played a lot of characters who are in uniform in one way, shape, or form, police officers, EMTs, and the like. Have you ever been in a situation where someone actually thought you were one of these people?
As a matter of fact, in my new movie, The Bay, this movie is shot a little bit different than most traditional films, as same guys who did Paranormal Activity did this film. So they were using different type cameras. At any given point, we could have had up to 20 cameras going at one time. But actually, in the film The Bay, we're shooting a scene where there was a body lying on the side of the road. Me and my partner discover the body. I start to call the body in, and they had the perimeter of the shoot shut down, obviously, but somehow a car snuck through with a pedestrian, and he comes rolling up on a dead body and a cop standing there. I walk over to him, and he had the most panic look on his face, and he's like, "Well, what's going on?" And I said, "We got it under control, son. Just keep rolling on." So I never broke character. He never knew. All he knows is he drove up on a dead body. And, It's pretty crazy. But he got a SAG card out of it, so that's awesome. I'm kidding. He didn't get a SAG card. But he has no idea. It was a pretty awesome moment there.
Yeah, well, method actor right to the end, I guess, right?
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
You've had a pretty busy career. Are there types of roles that you haven't had that you'd like to? What are you looking most for in a character?
I love the actors that I grew up watching. One of my favorite actors right now is Sam Rockwell. And I guess lately he's been getting more leading type roles. But earlier in his career, he was doing just an array of supporting roles. And this is, he's a perfect example of what I would like my career to be like. You know, it's a guy that you're not even sure if you know his name, but you know you've seen him in everything. And that's kind of where I want to be able to go out with my fam or friends, but, you know, also just have kind of a career where I consider myself a character actor. So I want to be all over the map with the characters that I choose and not get pigeonholed into just playing officers. So.
Now, you mentioned that your family's been very encouraging in your career as an actor from a very young age. I understand you have a young daughter?
That's right. That's right. Her name is Oakley.
And how old is she?
And she is 5. She just turned 5 last week. So,
and has she made any intent in wanting to go into the family business? And if she did, how encouraging would you be?
I would totally support her. You know, she does little dance numbers and stuff for the fam. But she kind of swings from side to side. You know, she will put on an insane show for us, but then you try and get her to talk to certain people, and she'll kind of be a little timid. So you never know what you're going to get with her. But I would be all about it. She wanted to, but don't want to force her into anything that I'm just being called girl. You know, I just wanted to be a little girl right now. So
the new movie is called The Bay, which opens on November the 2nd. What is up next for you?
I have a couple of movies coming out, with smaller parts in, but, did a, movie with Billy Crystal last year that I think is coming out Thanksgiving called Parental Guidance. So yeah, that was really just awesome. I got to work with him about 3 or 4 days, and I was actually talking to him about hosting the Academy Awards, and at the time we were talking about it, he started doing all the bits that he did from hosting the Academy Awards, and a few weeks later, Eddie Murphy dropped out. He originally was supposed to host last year's Academy Awards. And, Billy got the call that he was going to be doing it. So it was kind of really surreal to sit there, to be talking with a comedy legend like that, with him doing the material, and literally 2 weeks later, we find out that he's going to be doing the Academy Award. So he was awesome. It was really great to be with him. And then later on next year, I have a movie coming out called The Devil's Knock with Colin Firth and Reese Witherspoon. It's about the West Memphis 3. So that should be a good one to look out for, definitely.
And as I said, in the meantime, we look forward to The Bay, which is coming out on November the 2nd. Jody, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Definitely. Thanks, Peter. We'll talk to you later.
Actor Jody Thompson, one of the stars of the Barry Levinson thriller, The Bay. It opens on November the 2nd. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
Shahid Kalem, age 22, went to an ATM in Brooksville, Florida, to deposit an allegedly stolen $1,000 check. But when he tried to get the cash back out, he found his debit card was expired and he couldn't remember the PIN. After the ATM refused to give him cash, the check, or his card back, Kalem decided to try harder. According to Brooksville police, he backed up his car to the machine and tied a seatbelt strap around it in an apparent attempt to pull it out of the wall. When that failed, police say he pulled out a stolen handgun and fired it, shattering the window of the credit union where the ATM was located, directly across the street from the Hernando County Sheriff's Office. He fled the scene, but cameras got a clear shot of his face and car, and he was arrested when he returned to the credit union later that same day on unrelated business. Wow. Why would you try and steal and then shoot up a credit ATM machine across the street from a police station and then return to said credit union later that same day for unrelated business? Oh man, one reason and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0167. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0167. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.